I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wrestle me, Mark.
Wrestle EP!
Oh, it's WrestleMania 24, and are we excited to see the return of one of the best performers of WrestleMania 23,
yeah.
Batista.
You know what happened with him last time? He was like, I should be the main event.
Give me the main event!
So I'm going to go out there and I am going to destroy your preconceptions of what I am! And in this one, he's like, oh, I'm third, am I?
Oh, I'm third, am I?
I'm going to come out here and I'm going to stink up the joint! And boy, does he ever.
Yeah.
Introduced by the two general managers of Raw and SmackDown shows, William Regal and Theodore Long.
William Regal's hair in this is amazing.
It's so good. It's
I
also
didn't know he had it in him.
Because it's outside as well.
Yeah.
It ruffles in the breeze, oh, doesn't it? Oh, like Heathcliff.
What a chap.
Oh, what a chap.
Never knew he had it in
Sweet as. Umaga is continually being put like in proxy matches where he represents something. So last time he was representing Vince McMahon.
Fatness.
And this time he's representing some
diabetes
brand. I mean, I don't think any of the wrestlers really know what show they're on anyway.
No, do they? I mean, unless they, you know.
No, they're not marks. So William Regal gets to introduce, it must be the other way, Dave Bautista's on SmackDown and Umaga's on Raw because Regal, over the years, never ever got his name right. And whenever he'd sort of like be talking about him, he'd always say, here he is, it's Umaga. And he could never get it right.
Really?
Never. Right. He could never say it's Umaga.
Yeah. Right?
Even though everyone must have been saying the name all the time.
Three syllables.
But what's amazing is they obviously let him get away with it because no one says, look, you do understand, you can't keep getting his name wrong.
The wickedly talented Dina Menzel.
Yes.
Is that, did I get it right?
You got her name right.
Oh, yeah.
It's impossible to
wickedly
remember.
Wickedly talented. Oh, I can't remember what he says now.
Do you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I didn't Google it, and I should have done, because it would have come in handy now.
The wickedly talented. No.
Umaga!
Umaga!
He always says Umaga, and at WrestleMania, you know, it's not for him, because if you were Umaga, you'd go, do you have a fucking problem with me? Because every time.
Yeah.
And then you're at WrestleMania and you're like, oh, fucking cheers. Yeah. Umaga. Him coming back afterwards and going, that was all right. And going, you can't get my name right. Oh, boo-hoo. I'm Umaga. I'm crying about.
Why are you in charge of this?
This is not a good match.
No, terrible. Well, it's not terrible. It's just shit.
It is.
Short.
They do not gel together for some reason. And Umaga comes out, he does an astonishing dive through the ropes where he just, you know, he does some big things and it never clicks at all. And Batista, you can see, is genuinely annoyed by the end. He fucks up his Batista bomb. He sort of falls backwards. And as he sort of hits the floor, you just see him go, ah, damn! You know, and he pins him anyway. And it's just, I mean, it is just, it's one of those matches that, I remember people saying it was quite bad. And I thought, is it that bad?
Yeah.
And watching it, I was like, oh, it's even worse than I thought. It was a bit of a mess.
Don't put him on, he was good last time, so give him a better slot.
What's funny is the crowd are slightly turning against Dave Bautista at this point.
Right.
So they're beginning to, this isn't the Bautista year, which is where he came back at the Royal Rumble when everyone wanted Daniel Bryan to win it.
Right.
And Bautista was there. But they are beginning to boo him. And it's the Roman Reigns, John Cena thing where he was just overpushed.
Right.
He was the big baby face and people were sick of it. And so here, they quite often cheer Umaga. Umaga rarely cheered through his career.
Yeah.
Because he's so frightening looking more than anything else. but he was just pushed too much. This would be Umaga's last WrestleMania.
Right.
So he wouldn't. He died in December 2009,
yeah.
and here in April 2008. But he missed WrestleMania 25 the next year. And that was, he was on a number of hiatuses he took, 2 months here and a month there. And that seemed to be linked to more serious problems. So he was released from his WWE contract in June 2009.
Right.
Which would be the following year. Because he'd had a couple of wellness policy violations, but he refused to go into rehab. And it was really the refusal to go into rehab that the WWE had to sever their ties. Something they'd also done with Kurt Angle a few years before. The refusing to go into rehab. They didn't feel they could keep him around if he wasn't going to, you know, do that. They're obviously at a point where they're worried about him. So he is released in June. In November, he wrestles his final match. This is on an Australian tour that's set up by Hulk Hogan, which we will be talking a bit more about following the Ric Flair match.
Right.
And he has his final match against Mr. Anderson, who is the renamed Mr. Kennedy.
Yes, okay.
Kennedy also had the final match of Eddie Guerrero, and this turns out to be Umaga's final match as well.
Oh, that's so spooky.
He died in December. He was found by his wife in his home. He'd had a heart attack that had been brought on by toxicity of multiple substances in his system.
Yeah.
So they found hydrocodone, carisoprodol, and diazepam.
All the opiates.
They are the opiates.
Yeah.
Probably, are they pain pills? Is that?
Yeah, muscle relaxants, pain pills, just chill out tabs.
He was found that he also had heart and liver disease, and they said that the combination of the drug use, along with him having this bad heart and the bad liver, was the thing that led to his death.
Right.
So it's a real shame. He died very young. Umaga, he was a good heel. He was a good high level heel, but in some ways, I think he may possibly be the last big casualty of this era.
Right. Okay.
I'm
yeah.
not sure there's many people who follow him. I'm bound to be proved wrong as we go through.
I was watching a bit of talking about like, moving on after WWE and stuff with the wellness stuff, like the Scott Hall when he was in WCW. I didn't realize that they did a big angle about his drinking and stuff. Like, did a big long thing, and he was in and out of rehab all the time, and just, but when he would come back, they would just sort of take the piss out of the fact that he was an alcoholic.
The WWE did something similar with Road Warrior Hawk. They did a big angle where he was drinking and stumbling around and everything, and then he would die of a heart attack, you know, due to his undoubtedly due to steroids, a combination of steroids and recreational drugs, you know, just making his heart collapse. You know, times have changed. What you see here, obviously, is as well, Umaga, if they fired him in June because he wouldn't go into rehab, he was dead by December.
Yeah.
They were absolutely 100% right to say, if you're not going to go to rehab, you need a wake up call, you know. Out your contract, you go.
Aye.
I mean, very much they stepped in at the right point. It's just that Umaga decided not to take that hint, really. Mm. Sad. Sad news. Match number four. ECW champion Chavo Guerrero versus Kane.
Yes.
Armando Estrada comes out to introduce this, who looks like the authority figure if you went to a really low rent, like local wrestling promotion. Just like a guy in a white hat. And, I mean, the heartbreak here. So Joey Styles, WrestleMania is his last time he calls a WWE event, doing play-by-play. And he just says, it's a historic night as it's the first time the ECW Championship is defended at a WrestleMania. And Taz says, I never thought I'd see the day. 11 seconds. Done. This is the moment that if you were a wrestler and you were like undecided about whether Vince McMahon had given up on the whole ECW thing, this is the moment you go, Vince has given up on the ECW thing. That is very much over.
I mean, Kane's got to be winning the pounds per second wage packet kind of record there.
Hugely. He has actually.
Because he's a big star.
He did do the dark match. Which is the Battle Royale that he won to then get to this.
Well, it was highlights from that dark match before this match it ran, and it was like Carly's out within seconds.
Yeah.
And
there's some big guys in there like Mark Henry and stuff.
Yes.
And it's amazing those people who, like Mark Henry, who would suddenly have a career renaissance, but at this point are just in the dark match. Is that you or me?
I think that might be you, Mark.
Oh,
it's
so
embarrassing. It's under your paper. It's your dad.
It is my dad. Hello, Dad. Oh, right. Okay, they're next to the fridge, Dad. on the white, I don't even know what it's called. What's it called, that thing? Shelving unit. And they're in a biscuit tin, left of the fridge. Yeah,
I'm keeping this in.
Okay. Great.
I'm not even going to describe this. I'm just going to.
All good.
Let go.
Great. Thanks, Dad. I'll get back to the show. Bye. Apologies, Pete. My daughter wanted a biscuit.
Mark's dad there with a wrestling style run-in. And he has been inducted into the WrestleMania Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. I think it's very Daddy important Hems. That you know, like, as much as I love WrestleMania, it's very important that my child is given more expensive Ella's Kitchen things just because she demands them. Yeah. I would love to have like raspberry rice cakes and things.
Yeah.
Right? Jesus Christ.
What did we have when we were kids? Egg and chips. Egg and chips.
Chips, you lucky devil. Man.
And that's why we're starting a Patreon. Because Mark has a child now.
Yes, that's is exactly the reason. Because the other thing is, if we start it, I can say, look, I have to go in.
Because I have to do it now.
Pete and
yeah.
I have to record it.
Have because to watch wrestling.
I would love to be at home. Of course I'd love to be at home changing these nappies and clearing up this vomit. But I have to because of the Patreon. I mean, it's like a pair of handcuffs.
Exactly.
Hey, lads is out.
Money in the bank.
I just need to get out of the house. Good news. So, yeah, it's over for ECW.
Yeah.
That's the point my daughter wants to make. It's over for ECW.
It's having a biscuit. It's having a biscuit on the side.
Then we get our little Carlito and Maria promo. Which is the little advert they do.
Yes,
more charisma in those 40 seconds from Carlito than he ever showed in the rest of his career.
A lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers in this WrestleMania. Yes. The theme was Hail, Snore Hail
yep.
by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yep.
And I looked at the track listing of that album. Yeah, there's not much to choose from, but they could have gone for a more upbeat, kind of more.
Do you know what's amazing?
Track.
This was not the most watched WrestleMania of all time up to this point. So that was last year.
Yeah.
This did pretty well. It did over a million, and 700,000 in the room. And what is it? 14. I forget what it is. It does huge numbers.
Yeah.
But this is one that actually moved the needle on a lot of albums. And that Red Hot Chili Peppers album, the day after WrestleMania, had a spike in sales.
Right.
So it does work.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of, you know, slow sort
Jesus
of, you know,
though.
Drip, drip, drip.
Hey, yo.
That was 100% the sound of 2008, wasn't it? You would hear that everywhere.
Flea, you're not doing any slack verse for the next 10 years.
This is also a sort of funny thing where, obviously, at this sort of time, we were working at XFM.
Yes.
So this is all the music that we heard a lot. And I vaguely remember watching this WrestleMania. So this must have been a little bit after the single, you know, came out and things. But sort of going, oh, are they getting quite sort of like hip and contemporary and current, because they were always so far behind the curve.
Yeah.
But you are getting these big names. It's always a shame. This one, does it, apart from John Legend, I like it when they have playing them to the ring, you know?
Yeah, there aren't many
of those.
Yeah.
One of which will be explained. Edge specifically didn't want to be played to the ring, and I'll explain that as it goes on. But it's a shame. It is funny how you hear all these songs. There was one recently that I was watching, which was more recently. It used Billie Eilish's You Should See Me in a Crown.
Right, okay.
And that was the first mention I'd ever heard of Billie Eilish. I only get my wrestling, my music recommendation now through wrestling.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm listening to a lot of new metal, yeah.
Real Rage Against the sub Rage Against the Machine nonsense.
Yeah. There's now my favourite bit, actually, which is Raven Simone.
Yes.
Now, they sort of go star of, and I watched it twice and I couldn't like pick out what she was. Disney's Road Trip or something.
She was the kid from The Cosby Show.
Was she?
Yes. You'd think she'd want to limit her exposure to men with interesting medicine cabinets.
Oh, but I love that she comes out and what they haven't said, she's very up.
Yes.
Very, very, yeah. Woo! Yeah, yeah! Woo! And the crowd immediately turn against her. They don't like it at all.
Yeah.
But she's there to announce that the Make-A-Wish Foundation have brought 50 kids from 50 states to see WrestleMania.
And they film the kids and all the kids are like, yes, we're at WrestleMania. Yeah. It's a really life-affirming moment.
There's a lovely moment where you can just see the audience just going, who is this stupid girl going, oh, it's brilliant.
That's brilliant. Everyone's going, oh, brilliant, brilliant. And then Jerry the King goes, I'm a big fan of Raven Simone. Judge the room, Jerry. You don't have to fuck everything. It's just kids with cancer. Come on now.
Jerry's kids.
Put your Jerry's kids. Put your fucking cock away.
I did. There is one bit which really annoyed me where they panned across the kids who are there. And I love, I mean, fair enough to WWE, they could have kept it quiet, but they like to make it clear and they want everyone to know they've done it.
Yeah.
Great. I couldn't give them monkeys because these kids are having the time of their life. As it pans across, some fucking asshole in the crowd is got a beer and he's obviously trying to get into shot.
Yeah.
You're trying to get in front of the Make-A-Wish kid
yep.
with your beer.
No. No.
Absolutely nightmarish. Oh, and I suddenly dear. Thought then, they should have given them a better area. Just yeah. loads of drunks.
Oh, no.
Pauling.
And then you see Freddie Prinze Jr. in the crowd. Which is very enjoyable. It says, and I think Lola says, the stars have come out tonight. Freddie Prinze Jr., the star of Freddie, an American television sitcom in 2006 that aired from October 2005 to May 2006.
Was he married to Sarah Michelle Gellar or someone?
He had a bit of a WWE relationship.
He did, yeah. I think he was one of the writers for about a year and a bit.
That's interesting, isn't
it? Yeah, it was. I'm not sure it was a huge success.
No.
But interesting. I mean, again, I'm vaguely hoping one day to be a writer.
Yeah.
And all I want to do is just, all I'm going to be writing is about the behind the scenes. That's all I'm going to be doing. I'm going to continually get people like Jerry Lawler quite drunk. I'm just going to tape it all.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go to the greatest match of all time.
Yay!
This is match five. This is Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels in a career-threatening match.
Perfectly pitched.
Yep.
The emotion is so fever pitch. It's wonderful.
This is the perfect, cracking. the most perfect example of the mix in wrestling between the real and the fake.
Yeah.
So you have a genuine story that is presented through the medium of predetermined sport. And this is one of the, I was going to say like few, but I think it might be one of the only sort of actually moving, emotional and poignant matches of all time. There's only been one Ric Flair. So there's only one person who has had that astonishing career. He is the greatest wrestler of the 20th century. And because that's the only thing that we have on, you know, video, he is the greatest wrestler of all time. Mm. He is only going to come to the end of this world's greatest career once.
Yeah.
And it happens that it's going to be this night. And this night, he is going to have his last match. For most fans, Ric Flair has always been around. He is, you know, he is older than most fans. He has been going for years. I think 36 years he's been wrestling. And it is the end of an era because for the first time for most people watching, Ric Flair will no longer be a part of wrestling.
Yeah.
And watching that video they put up before this where you've got his career, it's just magic. The closest thing I can always think about this is Stanley Kubrick wanted to make the film AI, and he wanted to get one actor as a child, and he wanted to film it through the guy's life so that he would age through it, and it would be this story told by this one person through their life. Well, he doesn't need to do that because Ric Flair has done it. And when you see Ric Flair back in the 70s, all the way through, he's been telling like a story. The story of Ric Flair started in 1974 on telly, and it's run every week since like a soap. And finally, it's coming to an end. And it's not coming to an end because it's been cancelled. It's coming to an end because the man himself is stopping. It's the most magical thing.
Mm.
What they do is they give Flair the greatest send-off in the history of wrestling. And for one night, everyone knows he can't lose. He can't not lose.
Yeah.
He has to lose.
So it's a goodbye.
Because if he, it is. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But everyone's still got it in the back of their head that maybe, just maybe, he can defy this and keep going because no one wants to see him go.
Yeah.
He's 59 at this point, Ric Flair. He's still going out there. He's doing well. He's not performing at the level that he's done for most of his career.
Because he's 59.
Vince McMahon approaches him and says, I want you to retire. And Flair does not particularly want to retire.
Right.
But he says, what I want you to do is I want you to become the ambassador for the WWE. There's no point you keeping going out there at 60.
No.
McMahon had been on the skids with Hogan, Bret Hart, and a couple of other people who he'd previously wanted to be the ambassadors of the WWE.
Right.
So Flair is really one of the only big names that he sees will fit in that role. And so they come up with the idea, and I believe Stone Cold Steve Austin was involved in this idea, which is that he will keep going until he loses a match. So McMahon says, the next time you lose a match, your career's over.
Right.
This runs for about 5 months. And there are some genuine moments where you think, oh, is Flair going to retire here? So I think they put him in a Intercontinental title match at the Royal Rumble with Chris Jericho. So you know, oh, they're not going to give him the belt. So, okay, it could be here. And he wins
it. They give him the belt.
You know, and it keeps going like that. Now, there are some lovely sort of like moments, and it just builds and builds and builds and builds to WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Flair himself said, they decided it was time for me to go. It wasn't me volunteering to leave. It was mutually agreed upon, but I think they figured while I was still healthy and everything, it was a good idea to retire. And he said, I'd really hoped, if I was going to have to do this retirement thing, that I'd either be against Hunter, Triple H, or Shawn Michaels. Mm. Either one worked for me. I was really fortunate to be involved with either one of them. Shawn was probably the greatest performer of all time, and it made it very special. He said, I've wrestled everybody that had any name recognition at that point. There wasn't another opponent that was my dream opponent. Being fortunate enough to wrestle Shawn Michaels was probably the first or second biggest moment of my WWE tenure. So Flair goes up against Shawn Michaels, who at this point is still Mr. WrestleMania. He performs better than anyone else on the big stage.
Yeah.
And Flair is a big inspiration. So as a child, Michaels has been a huge Flair fan, and the two men are now friends. And they just build up a really simple sort of storyline along it that Michaels announces that Ric Flair is going into the Hall of Fame, and Flair sort of says, I need to know that I'm not past it, that I'm not this, you know, washed up old legend. And he says, I need to compete with the best, and the day I can't do that, then I won't continue. And so Shawn Michaels ends up saying, I've got so much respect for you that I'm not going to do it by half measures. I will bring you the best Shawn Michaels, and I'll give you the showstopper and the icon. They use lots of references to Old Yeller in this, which is obviously a much more of an American touchstone than it is in Britain. Because, do you know Old Yeller?
I only know that he dies. Yeah. They have to kill him.
Well, Old Yeller is like again, I don't 100% know either. But from what I've been able to ascertain through watching wrestling for all these
years.
It's
like an old dog.
It's like an old dog that is brilliant.
Right.
And sooner or later, you have to take it, you know, with regret, round the back of the barn and shoot it.
Yeah.
And that's the story of Old Yeller.
Yeah.
And so that's basically, you know, Flair is going, I am not going to go out with my tail between my legs. I'm going to go out, you know, in a blaze of glory. Do your best. And this works, this angle, because it's real. Because these are all the things that Flair does think.
Yeah.
You know, if I can't perform at that level, I shouldn't be here. And I've got to prove I can still go. And we knew he couldn't win. We knew he couldn't win. Because if he did win, you're just going to have to have this pad out for another year to get to a WrestleMania so that he could retire.
Yeah.
They've never done a retirement angle at WrestleMania up to this point. This is the very, very first time. And so it was just a massive deal.
Mm.
He comes down in that blue robe. It's different from his normal robes. Don't change your gimmick now, Rick. But
he's dressed up as a ghoul. Oh, no. The American badass. What are you doing, Rick?
God, he comes out, and he's already a little bit emotional. And out he comes in the thing, and his family are all sort of crying already. that robe is owned by the Smithsonian Museum of American History. And if you go online, it's not on display. They've obviously just stuck it in a back room.
Yeah, they found better things.
we've got, like, you know, the lunar module. this is all very nice and everything. But, I mean, it's not even real sequins. It's just plastic. but they have got online, you can click onto the
oh, they scan holdings. Them down. They scan these beautiful.
But it's high res, and you can really zip in to see how it's made.
Oh, lovely.
Fabulous, fabulous. Out he comes, and I mean, just the reception he gets is thrilling. Yeah. Previously to that, they have a little interview that he does with Mike Adamlay, who is a very short tenured interviewer, probably the least informed, least interested in wrestling person ever to work in wrestling. He famously called Jeff Hardy Jeff Harvey in a big interview. I mean, he's that bad, and he gets to do the pretty much the last interview that Ric Flair ever does as an active performer. And Flair just keeps it short and sweet. What's my game plan? To be a man.
Yeah.
Out they come. Flair keeping it together. And what's really interesting about this match is Shawn Michaels called the entire thing.
Right.
So basically, he was apparently, his words to Flair when they went out. And then this, I mean, it seems incredible they didn't do something in advance.
Yeah.
But basically, he said that to Flair, shut up and listen. That was his thing. Right. And he said he can be a bit of a control freak, Michaels, in his matches. But he said, from the standpoint, he said, I knew where I wanted it emotionally. The match was, as cheesy as it sounds, it was going to be my love letter to Ric Flair. And it was my way of trying to show him the friendship we had and the impact he had on the 15-year-old me. And I wanted to convey that to him through a wrestling match. Michaels finds it difficult to explain what he was doing there. But I think what he wanted to do was he wanted to go out there and give Flair a match that was much better than Flair was able to do by himself at that time. And so Michaels, Flair later on says, at times, Michaels is just wrestling himself, and it makes for a better match than I could have done. There's a point where Michaels does a moonsault, a sort of springboard moonsault, out of the ring onto the Flair, who's on the announcer's desk. Mm. And Flair gets out of the way, and Michaels lands with the nastiest, like, bang onto the the thing. Just, it ribs and everything.
Yeah.
And you suddenly realise that Flair doesn't really need to be there. Michaels is just doing it all. He's beating himself up, and he's... but. Oh, it's so... this match, is it the most emotional match of all time? Mm. Yes. Is it a great match? Yes. But is it a state-of-the-art, brilliantly executed wrestling match? Yes, because I don't care what anyone says, Pete. I love this match so much. This is... I mean, throughout, there are so many bits as a wrestling fan that you just go, this is brilliant. This is what Michaels means about the love letter. There are bits that... talk about Flair's history throughout the whole thing. So he comes off the top turnbuckle and he hits Michaels with a sort of, you know, a crossbody, which is Flair famously would never manage to do a move off the top rope. He'd always get pushed off,
right.
That sort of thing. There's a bit where Michaels slams him and you see that Flair lands on his hip. And that's because Flair never landed on his back because he had his back broken in a plane crash in 1975, and he always took bumps on his side. Right. No other wrestlers do that, really. Yeah. It's just Flair. So when you see that, you're like, even in this match, every little moment is reminding you of the history of this unique performer.
Yeah.
There's even the bit right at the start where Michaels slaps Flair really, really hard, and there's blood. And Flair was one of the great bleeders.
Mm.
But it's also that thing of sort of going, I'm not going to go soft on you because you're 59. I'm going to slap the taste out of your mouth. And Michaels then sort of goes, you can leave. And Flair, I don't know whether they got it mic'd up, but I mean, it really does work in a moment. But Flair just goes, yeah, you got first blood. And it's just, again, all of these sorts of things. I don't know. They're just almost, there's history peppered throughout this, which I think maybe is just because of my love of Ric Flair.
Mm.
But I can understand what Michaels means when he says it's a love letter. There's all these nods to Flair's history that you barely notice within the actual sort of ebb and flow of a match. The story Trent telling is great, that there's a point where Michaels can't bring himself to do the super kick. But Flair is straight there, taking advantage. That was a great sort of sign of him as a wrestler. Mm. He was never the strongest, the fastest, the quickest, or the roughest. But what Flair was an opportunist. And he would wait for a mistake and he would capitalise. There's bits where he does low blows, the dirtiest player in the game. It's just the history of Ric Flair told in one great celebratory match. And I think that takes it from beyond the thing about who's going to win. What it is going, I'm going to throw nods to the 36 years this man has been doing this, to the greatest. And it's just, that is where wrestling becomes. They talk about the ring being a canvas and wrestlers painting, you know, the story they want to tell on that canvas. And Shawn Michaels just brings a level of artistry which I don't think anyone else has ever done, and you can only do it really with Ric Flair. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Maybe it's just they're doing stuff that they always do and we've seen a million times. I don't know.
But the finish.
Yeah.
Like the super kick, the kick at the end. Yeah. It's like, jeez.
As it builds to the end, I mean, there's a bit where Flair kicks out a two and the audience roar. This WrestleMania, the big matches, the crowd don't get into them at the start, but they get really invested as they go on. There's a point where Flair, Michaels is getting the super kick ready. We know he's going to happen. He's going to get hit by it. And Flair grabs the referee. And while he's holding the referee, he back heels Shawn Michaels in the nuts. And there's a moment where the crowd, I think he pins him. And when he kicks out, the crowd actually squeal. There's not 70,000 people not roaring or booing, but just going, like that. It's absolutely amazing. But the end section, as you say, I mean, you know, as he
iconic
drags himself up, he knows that the end is in sight, but he's not going to shy away from it.
Yeah.
He's just going to say, if this is it, this is it. And he says, Come on. He's got that sort of by this point he's got a slur to his voice. Yeah. He always reminds me of that put him up. The Cowardly Lion. Come on. And Shawn Michaels says, "I'm sorry, I love you." Bang, the super kick hits. Flair is in absolute floods of tears before he even hits the floor.
Yeah.
That was apparently Flair was not expecting Michaels to say that. It was one of those extemporized things. Michael said Flair said it wasn't planned at all. And it's a moment I'll never forget. You cannot plan something like that. I just think it's how he felt. I'm honored he grew up admiring me and he took me there with him in that moment. But you can't rehearse something like that. Michaels said, "I told him I loved him and I can't say it without getting weepy half the time. You have to understand the guy who was in the ring with him. I was in there in body. But inside, it was the 15-year-old kid who watched him every Saturday. And I wanted to say, thank you for giving me this honour, and I love you for it." They get the three count. Flair is bawling. Michaels holds him, he gives him a kiss, and he leaves his ring. And Flair is just on his back, sobbing. He is broken and devastated. And I don't think there is... I was watching this with my wife, and she came into it about, "Oh, is this that Ric Flair one?" Yeah. And when he is crying on the floor, I heard her going, and I was super aware when I heard her crying. I thought, good, because I'm crying. It makes me cry because I would honestly say I don't think there's a more raw emotion. A moment that's ever been caught by a TV camera.
No.
than watching a man give up the thing that he's done for the whole of his life and knowing it's over. And he has to give up because time won't let him continue. It got me. Oh, it gets me every time. Lump in the throat.
I have no other way of ending this episode. But I think we should leave it there. That's beautiful.
Let's leave it with both of us on our backs. But I'll be screaming, red-faced, and...
"I'm sorry, I love you."
But don't worry, he will come back for another year.
And he'll fit a TNA run.
it's a disaster. Let's leave it with the final thing. Michaels gets him a present at the end of it. He gets them each a Rolex. That's the sort of thing that you do when you're trying to... You sort of get like two things, and that's because you want one as well. But Michaels gets two Rolexes, and it says... Richard Flair, which is Flair's real name, Richard Flair versus Shawn Michaels. He doesn't put his real name in, Michael Hickenbottom. More expensive, maybe. And he gives Flair the Rolex that has engraved on it underneath that, "To be the man." And Michaels has the one that underneath it says, "You've got to beat the man."
Oh,
Mark. Good, isn't it?
Oh, I'm spent, mate. honestly,
I will put my hand on my heart. There is no better WrestleMania match than Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels. There is no, you'd be hard pressed to find a better wrestling match, full stop. It is magic on levels which most matches are not able to even imagine being on. Oh, it's just the best.
We'll be back next week.
Recipe B.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.